pick it. So welcome, everybody. Everyone knows me. I think, I don't know if you know me or not, but welcome. Dr. Brian Walsh, and we'll be talking about the sign has kind of anxiety and depression. We'll be focusing a little more on the anxiety part, but it's hard to separate the two because sometimes they're kind of intermingled, and we'll talk about that a little bit because one can kind of lead to the other and vice versa. So, and then we'll have like a little question and answer thing too at the end if you have any questions that I don't answer along the way. I always like to start this off, so bear with me. A little quote that talks about how we think here. The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame and diet and the cause and prevention of disease, right? That's like a holistic approach, like Thomas Edison made that quote 100 years ago. So he's really holistic and looking at the whole person, the spine, because it controls everything, getting to the diet, because that's the thing that's been like majorly wrecked over the past 50 to 100 years. And then preventing things, right? Medicine in America is great at surgery and life-saving procedures, but just not so much in chronic health. Because even though like we spend the most in the world on healthcare, when you rank it, the World Health Organization, we're like 35th or something like that, when you look at all these standards. So we're paying a lot, but we're not really have great healthcare in general. So when you look at kind of the difference between anxiety and depression, you could look at anxiety as more of people tend to be more like forward-looking, like future anticipating, fearful about what might happen, right? And one of the things for fear is false evidence appearing real, right? It seems real, but it's really not. And whereas depression tends to be more backward-looking, and people tend to be more sad about something that may have happened in the past. But the common thing there is that people aren't in present time. Right, that's part of what can create any kind of depression, anxiety type of thing, is people are stuck except right here in present time, because they're thinking about something that might happen, or they're thinking about something really bad that may have happened in the past, or something they are experiencing, and they stay in that depressed kind of sad mode. So, and it's really more common than you think. They're saying like children now are starting to become more affected by like anxiety and mood stuff, and they're saying upwards of like 20-25% of kids. Sometimes now we're dealing with this, and adults are running around 50 million or so, they say, on average per year that like are kind of considered to have an anxious disorder. So it's not a minor issue. And actually, this was an older statistic, so it would be interesting to see if they took that now, to see if that's changed a little bit as a result of COVID and all of our world uncertainty, because that does breed a lot of anxiety, right? Uncertainty, because it's whenever the human brain doesn't like know exactly what's going to happen, it doesn't always like that, right? It's like it can get you in that anxious state. But there are some like medical reasons that these things can happen. Sometimes illnesses can drive these kind of things. If you've been sick for a long time, that can cause you to be depressed. And even depending on the type of illness, you can get into that anxiety mode of what am I going to be like in a year, 5 years, if I'm this sick now, then what's going to happen going forward, right? So those kind of, if someone's been really sick for a long time, that can breed more anxiety because of the uncertainty of what's going forward. Something people don't think about is that foods can actually trigger this kind of stuff, even in kids as well, because besides like digestive problems and some of those things, sometimes foods cause these mood type disorders. I had this one gal, she had tried to get off her medication for 10 years, and she just could not. Every time she tried, she'd have to go back. And she was sensitive to like gluten and sugar or something, I don't know. And we had to do this elimination diet, and like in 3 months, she was able to get off the medication. Because that food was doing something weird to her physiology that was causing her brain to be unstable. So, you know, think about those kind of things for food, but it can cause that kind of stuff as well. And then there's some, I think some of these additives and dyes and all those things, especially for children, can cause lots of the mood disorders because we just don't know what these things do on your brain. Chronic pain, that can definitely cause lots of issues, especially more on the depression side. Back in 2019, I had like the worst sciatic ever, worst pain in my life ever. And that wears you out over time, let me tell you. And people stay in that for years. They've actually found that people that have chronic pain for like more than 1 or 2 years, and you look at their brains, it actually starts shrinking their brain faster than normal, which is never a good thing, because the small, when shrinking of the brain always means less function in general and more likely to have dementia. So that's why you always want to try to get out of pain as fast as possible, because the longer it stays there, the harder it is to get rid of. That's another good reason too. Any kind of prolonged stress can trigger these things, you know, whether it's family stress, job stress, can be triggers for anxiety or depression. Some people, this can happen, especially with children that you would put on the autism spectrum disorder type thing. A lot of them have a hard time processing like sensory input, like sound, noise, light, all these different things. And because that's like too much input to their brain sometimes at one time, that can really trigger them to be in this anxious state a lot. And so sometimes helping them control their environment and help them to be aware of that, that can actually help with their anxiety type thing. But it's almost like an information overload to their brain, basically. The other thing besides the foods, they have shown that when you get certain toxins in your body from the environment, where we breathe and drink and all the eat and all this stuff, those toxins can have an effect on the brain. And the thyroid gland and the adrenal glands, which are part of your control system, right, that kind of handles some of that, that doing a detox program for some people actually calm their brain down. They feel a lot more steady after doing that type of thing. And then there's a connection between the immune system and what's called the amygdala, which are your emotional centers of the brain. People that have been chronically sick for a long time, like could be a virus or whatever it is, that connection between the brain and the immune system can cause them to be more anxious or depressed. So a lot of times the answer is getting their immune system balanced again, and then their emotional things get steady. So it's really a neat connection. It's always been there. Medicine doesn't look at that a whole lot, but I've had people that were sick from whatever condition, and you get their immune system straight, and now it's like, wow, I'm not as anxious as I used to be. I'm not as depressed as I used to be. It's just my brain's working better. Those are like the major reasons. There are some things, like certain medications will make you more likely, you know, to have these issues. But the other thing is, when it comes to the organs, the adrenal glands, right? They sit on top of your kidneys. They regulate your stress response in your body, your blood sugar, your blood pressure. If you've been under stress a long time, this is usually why stress causes emotional problems, is you become intolerant to stress. Like anything pushes you over, you know? And it could be anxiety, it could be depression, but those adrenal glands, when they don't respond to life very well, stresses, then we don't handle emotional changes as much. So sometimes getting people, whether it's a nutritional change, which we'll talk about in the end, or having them do stress management type techniques, until you fix that adrenal response, then they just won't get over their emotional changes, emotional parts. So some people, they come to me, either they're trying to avoid like medication type stuff for these conditions, or maybe they are on something and they want to get off them. So there is a time for medication with this type of stuff. You know, if you're really super anxious and you have a hard time working or sleeping, there's a time to get on something that calms your brain down. But the ideal thing is short term, and you don't have to be on it for long periods of time while you're dealing with whatever caused it, right? That's my goal, is to find out what caused it, help correct them through diet and lifestyle and nutrition, and then hopefully wean off whatever they're on. That's like the ideal scenario. Because there is a place for them, but ideally short term. Unfortunately, a lot of people, they get on these for years and then they have other things. They gain weight, which can cause other problems and put them at risk for diabetes and these other disorders. And so we want to try to get them off and onto something that's natural. And there are some natural things we'll talk about at the end that can be an alternative if people are trying to avoid medications. But medications are only for like the stopgap. If you have to, then you do them. And I mentioned the different organs, the adrenal glands. Sometimes if your thyroid's sluggish, that puts you more on the depression side. Usually if it's a hyperthyroid, then that's when you get anxious more. But usually you can figure that one out pretty good with blood work. And then on the nutritional deficiency side, a lot of the B vitamins are very important for brain health, especially B12 and B6, folic acid. Those are really like the critical ones. And especially people in the older age groups, they don't absorb them as well. And so they sometimes just a natural supplementation with a B complex helps people like chill out. On the anxiety side, it tends to be a little more. Sometimes if people are missing their minerals, different minerals, especially magnesium, that can make them be a little edgy, more edgy than they should be. So those are just kind of more on the physiological side. I mean, the good thing is there's lots of natural things that you can do, right, to help fix these problems. Ruling out any of the medical conditions I mentioned, thyroid problems and these adrenal problems, from the medical standpoint, is the best way to go. We do something called nutrition response testing, which is using muscles. Most of you have experienced that, where we use muscle testing to figure out food sensitivities and toxins and nutritional deficiencies, and that can help. Sometimes when the blood doesn't find it, it's a really good way to get to the root of what's happening. That's my preferred method, even though we use blood work too if something's not showing up. But we're always looking to the causes, right? So we evaluate the diet and see if there's any, you know, one of my primary things is trying to get people from, if they're doing a lot of processed foods, is to adjust a whole food diet, right? That's the first place to start, is real food and get away from packaged, processed dyes, sugars. All those things can just destabilize your brain. I mean, we were meant to eat food, you know, and all this other stuff, you know, that makes it last longer. So that's like the foundation that we always work with everybody. I mentioned if there's toxins in the body, like heavy metals, or say somebody works at a plant or something where they're exposed to these different industrial chemicals, a lot of times they will feel much better when you get them detoxed. That's one of the things that used to cause for me, like I was at a, I'd gone to this, it was an expo that I was one of the booths, I was one of the vendors, and it was at like this gymnasium, and they had this, whatever the matting stuff is they put down to protect the floor, and it was outgassing pretty well, like you could smell it when you walked in there. And after about 45 minutes, I'm like, gosh, I'm like, feel anxious. It's like, I'm happy to be here. I don't get anxious at these things in general. I like talking to people. And it occurred to me, I bet you something's going on with this outgassing stuff. And so thankfully I had some remedies with me. There were these mini homeopathic detox things. And I just took those about every 15 minutes or so. And it kind of calmed my brain down a little bit. But that's how, like, some people can be affected quickly by these things. That you start inhaling them. And then it goes right to your brain because the sense of smell, right? It can go right in. And that's why essential oils are so powerful, right? Because you can smell them and it can change your moods like very, very quickly, actually. And then if there's things with the body, physical pain, if you're out of alignment, and I mean, a lot of that can help the brain a lot. It can help it function better, get the discomfort out of there, get you moving better. If there's too much stress in somebody's life, then the deep breathing techniques, relaxation techniques, all these different things you can incorporate to get that cortisol level down, because that will make you anxious when your cortisol is high. Going outside, outdoors, they prove that being in nature, going to the beach is like totally calming on your body and your brain. All those natural things that you can do, which you can get your body back into sync. There are some people, it's not everybody, but caffeine can be excite people too much and make them a little more anxious. Excuse me. So I do look at that in some folks. It's not always the problem, but the more you drink, the harder problem you're going to have with the anxiety part, if that's an issue. Some people just don't break it down very well. If someone's not getting enough of the good omegas in their diet, right, the omega-3s from fish and flax oil and these different kinds of things, nuts and seeds, that can also make you a little more anxious because your brain needs those oils to like be steady. I mentioned the B vitamins and the minerals. That can be very healthy. The other cause I forgot to mention, I just saw it in my notes, is this whole thing that's like really getting a lot of research nowadays, especially the past 5 years, is, you know, what they call this gut-brain interaction that happens. Well, many times when kids or adults, if they've got this where there's too many bad guys and not enough good guys down there, there's a big correlation between anxiety and or depression and the gut being out of balance with the good and bad bacteria. So sometimes with those diet changes and getting rid of yeast in their system or whatever it may be, that getting that straightened out then calms the brain down. And it's really interesting how that connection has come to be more than, you know, they talk about you are what you eat. They said that for years, you know, and because that can throw off the good guys and bad guys if you're not eating right. And so just fixing somebody's gut sometimes and their brain gets happy. So, I mean, that's a, it's not always easy to do that, but it's an effective way. It can be if that's the problem. Tai Chi and exercise are also the good ones to calm down the brain. Exercise, if you look at all the things that exercise does when you do it consistently, it helps many of the conditions that we're dealing with in America, right? Because it lowers cortisol, it lowers your blood pressure, it helps your blood sugar. You know, these are like some of the main conditions that are making people sick just by exercising. Also on the vitamin kind of side, inositol, which is one of the B vitamins, when you take it in larger doses, has been shown to be very effective for anxiety and depression and even help with sleep.
What was
Because
that called?
inositol, Inositol, inositol.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the B vitamins. You usually have to take a good amount of it, but that can be very effective. It helps your blood sugar, but it calms your brain down a little bit. It can also help pain. Some people with nerve pain, it helps their nerve pain when you give inositol, when you give enough of it. You know, everybody's heard a ton about CBD. It's like almost on every corner now. It's like gas stations, you know. It's like there's another CBD store. Some people benefit greatly from CBD. It is not a cure-all, like a lot of these owners would have you believe, but it can be very helpful for some folks that are deficient in those CBD pathways, they call it, and it's fairly safe. And the thing I tell people is to start slow and work your way up, because you want like the least amount that gets the job done, basically, is what you want. But that's really a nice safe way. Sometimes kids too will help kids if they're kind of hyperactive or having problems with sleeping in the evening. On the herbal side, things like valerian. A lot of times you'll see these in combinations. Valerian, passion flower, hops, St. John's wort. These all can have very beneficial effects in both the depression and the anxiety world. Sometimes they can take a little longer to get the full effect, but they're usually still quicker than actually having to wait for, well, the antidepressants take longer to work in general, right? They usually max out in your system 4 to 6 weeks. The anxiety drugs, they're quick. The ones they give you, they usually work like that. But those can, you can become dependent on those, and you don't want to stay there. There's an amino acid called L-tryptophan, which is that's the precursor to serotonin, so that can be very effective. GABA is another one, GABA. That one doesn't always absorb well in some people, but when it does, it's really good for anxiety. I mean, it can really calm people down if they absorb it well. And then something similar, it's like a different step in the serotonin pathway, is called 5-HTP. So L-tryptophan gets converted to 5-HTP. So some people, if they take the 5-HTP, they do better than the L-tryptophan because it doesn't have to be converted. So, but if people are already on medications, they got to be careful because it works on the same pathway. And you could get too much of the serotonin response and get a serotonin storm, and that kind of make you wacky. So I generally don't give that to folks that are on medication. I try to use more homeopathic stuff that won't interfere with the drugs, so they don't go off the deep end the other way. And I mentioned the some essential oils. I'm not a expert on that, but lavender, peppermint, those are some biggies for like calming the brain down. From a tea standpoint, they make tinctures too, chamomile. Right? I mean, that's a simple way to start. Chamomile tea can be very like calming and relaxing, and you can still function. You know, the good thing about most of these natural things, it doesn't knock you out. You know what I mean? You can still function. You just feel calmer, typically, when you take these. There was one other one, an amino acid, L-theanine, it's called. That has a very calming effect on your nervous system. And again, it doesn't make you like sleepy type thing. Or some of the anxiety medication, you got to be careful when you take it because it might be too much, you know, and you're kind of groggy. But the L-theanine, it kind of balances things and it takes that anxious feeling down and helps you be more calmer. And some people, they'll take a little more of it before sleep because it's effective for sleep. Those are some of like the biggies that are really effective. I mentioned nuts and seeds as sources of the good oils, because that can be, you want a lot of those good omegas in your diet. Part of a lot of the health gurus believe that one of the shifts from 50 years ago to now is we don't get enough of those good oils in our body like we used to years ago. And that creates this imbalance of those neurotransmitters in your brain. The other reason that I forgot to mention with that gut-brain thing is most of our serotonin is made in your gut and your digestive tract. So when that's out of balance, that's why we can have these brain imbalances, is because it's been disturbed and it's not being produced normally or absorbed normally. So when you fix the gut, serotonin works better and your brain works better, right? Because our brain likes serotonin, a certain amount of it. That's good there. I think that's most of the... And with the minerals, magnesium is usually the biggie, right, when it comes to being, especially on the anxious side. Magnesium is involved in so many processes of the body, and it's a nice, simple way to start, and it can relax your muscles, you know, and calm down your brain a little bit. Typically, you know, you get too much of it is if it loosens your bowels, then you got too much magnesium in your system. So that's people, well, how much do you take? Well, you can take this much, but start slow and then you can add a little more to get the effect. But if you get too much, it'll definitely make your bowels loose and go, which will cause other problems, cause more stress, right? So I think that's the most that we always want, you know, always trying to look at the bigger picture, right? Look at the whole person. Because if what I have found, especially nowadays, because it's so darn stressful, our environment, is that it can't just be you fix the vitamins or you fix the minerals or you clean up their diet, right? Those are all good and necessary. But if that person has some stress in their environment, whether it's family or job or whatever, that is constant and unrelenting, that it just won't break, you know, because the stress nowadays causes enough interference to your nervous system and your brain that you'll get better, but you won't get where you want to be if you don't fix whatever's causing the most stress. So I always try to incorporate that as part of what we do, because sometimes I'll fix everything else in a person except I just can't get them over whatever they're dealing with stress-wise, or they're not willing to deal with whatever the issue is. I mean, some people need to change jobs, right, in order to get out of their situation. Sometimes it's a relationship, unfortunately, if they can't work a good counseling thing out. But some people, they'll just never get better unless you fix the stress component, because it holds them back so much and changes your physiology so much. So it's really the big picture. Fix all the different components that can go wrong, and then hopefully over time your brain will go back to where it was supposed to be. Right? Balance is what we want, balance. Any questions? About anything? Mm-hmm.
I know you mentioned before inositol.
Yes.
By chance, is it, I've read where it's in powder form and pill form, am I correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I have both forms, because some people, they have to do a lot of it in order to get the effect. Like I had this one gal, she had a history of anxiety and depression and like some really bad, like having to take time off type. And she felt like she was heading there. And so I did my muscle testing and we tested the inositol, and that tested really good. It was really impacting her sleep. I mean, she just couldn't sleep. And she had to take a lot of it. So we put her on the powder form, and it totally, like in 2 days, it totally chilled her out. She said, I've never had something work that fast. She started sleeping, her brain calmed down until she could get her situation straightened out better. But yeah, if you don't do the powder, they're eating 20 of these things, you know, 20 or 30 of these tablets a day. Yeah, depending on how much a person needs. But the powder, you only need, you know, like a teaspoon or something, and that's enough. But yeah, they actually did studies of mild to moderate depression and or anxiety. And I forget the amounts, it was fairly high. The milligrams, several thousand. But it worked as good as an antidepressant. I mean, it was quite effective. It's totally safe. I've never had anybody really react to it. It can because it doesn't directly do that, but because it lowers your stress response, it can lower your blood pressure. Because a lot of people, that's why they got high blood pressure. They're too stressed, right? So, yeah, definitely a goodie.
What's the easiest way to check for the gut bacteria balance?
So there are some, they have these what they call microbiome gut tests. I'm actually looking at one of them that I found. It's fairly affordable. Some of the problem with a lot of these is they're like $400 or $500 for most of these gut tests, for the good ones. You know what I mean? That are going to test a lot of stuff. So I found one that's under 200, I think it is, but I don't know. I haven't compared it to see all the different things they test for, but that is one way. To get a good idea of the good guys and bad guys, like relative concentrations, it's usually like a stool test is what you usually do, and that can be very effective. I mean, I can use my muscle testing and get a general idea of if you've got a yeast overgrowth or something like that, but I can't tell you how much of what, you know. So it's only those stool tests that really zero in on it. But yeah, that's the primary way they're using right now. The one for the upper part of your, like, there's something called SIBO, which is small intestine bacterial overgrowth, right? That can be a problem for some folks. It's more in the upper part. There's actually a breath test they have that you breathe into this thing and it measures the amount of sulfur and gases in there. That's not too expensive, and I think that's like an in-office thing you can do. That's fairly reliable at saying, oh, you got the wrong gases, which means there's something down there producing something in your small intestine that's not good. And medically, they would typically give you an antibiotic. And sometimes you actually have to do this for the really bad ones. But it's short term, right? Just to get rid of it. And then you could use probiotics to straighten it out after that if you killed too many of the good guys. But there are some herbal things you can do for that too. Anything else? Oh, you guys are easy. So in your handout, there is a little thing on there that talks about the health talks coming up in May. We've got, I'll be doing two. Katie, who is the person that does thermography in our office, will be doing one herself. Yeah, there it is.
What is
thermography? Thermography. So it's a form of what they call thermal imaging. It's infrared technology. So it's a special camera that picks up heat in the body. And so what they found with the thermography is it can catch stuff many, sometimes years before like a breast cancer would start. And it detects change in circulation in different areas, either too much or too little. And it helps people zero in on, is this a problem area that maybe like shows up with some other testing 2 years down the road? Because it can detect stuff earlier, that's the key. And it's non-invasive, you know, it's just a picture you take. And she does that out of our office. You just make an appointment with her and then she does that. But she'll be talking about that technology that day. And she's also going to be talking a little bit about some natural things, you know, the breast exam, home breast exams, and dry brushing, and lymphatic massage to help all that stuff. So May 11th, a Tuesday, May 11th at 7, I'll be doing the women's health, kind of a 101, natural stuff you can do for the different conditions. She'll be doing hers Monday, May 17th on the thermography. And then at the end of the month, May 27th, a Thursday, I'll be doing Fix Your Gut. So I'll talk more about the gut stuff and how that works. Any last minute questions?
Well, as you know, my diet for the last year. But you said something about avoiding many of these things if you're on the antidepressant.
Yeah, so there are some natural things that will work with that. The two that were the most problematic with the antidepressants is the L-tryptophan and the 5-HTP. Those are the ones I tend to steer away from if people are on medication. But like the L-theanine and some of these other things, you can use the inositol, that won't interfere with that serotonin pathway.
And you think that inositol would also help sleep?
It does. That's one of the applications I use it for in folks, because it acts pretty quickly. Like, you know, within 30 minutes, people feel it. So it can be very effective for sleep. It is safe. You would just do much smaller doses.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's actually a fairly safe thing to give to kids, because it doesn't mess with too many of their brain chemicals or anything like that. So.
Okay. It's kind of sweet too. So it's
exactly.
Put in a juice or something. The
yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah. The inositol is sweet. Matter of fact, because it does help, because the inositol can help with blood sugar. If people have a heavy sugar craving, I'll have them chew one of those tablets if they have a sugar craving. And a lot of times it calms it down. They will not grab for the candy bar after that, because it satisfies that sweet sensation and it calms their brain down a little bit. Because, you know, the sugar calms your brain down too, initially.
So it's chewable?
The tablets I have are chewable. Yeah. I mean, you can swallow them too, but they're soft and kids love them. Kids love the tablets. Yeah, I'll have to check you next time. Alrighty. We're good? Alrighty. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.